WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and my next guest says there's a life lesson to learn from video games. If at first you don't succeed, try again. Jesper Juul is a visiting assistant professor at the NYU Game Center and author now of The Art of Failure, an essay on the pain of playing video games. He joins me now. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
The NYU Game Center. Now, when I went to college, that's where they kept the pinball machines.
Yeah.
I guess now it's an academic institution.
Oh, definitely. I mean, people often ask me why you choose to study video games, both say, like as research or take a class in video games. I think it's actually very hard to explain why you wouldn't do it. So video games are obviously a kind of very big part of culture now. So I think it's very clear that we need to take them seriously, both as trying to understand how they work or how people use them, and also to prepare people to design them and design like interesting new games that perhaps like break the mold compared to what we're used to.
It's probably not what most people are thinking when they're playing. Aha, I'm in this to fail, and I'm going to get something out of it when I fail. Tell us about the theory.
Yeah, so it kind of came to me because I was playing a particular Japanese game called Patapon, and I kept failing in it, basically. So I kept being stuck at the same place, going back to it. I became very angry. I put it down. I came back to it. I put it down. And then it occurred to me that we tend to talk of video games as being fun. But if you were looking at me playing that game, it wouldn't be the word you would choose, right? So it would be very non-obvious to you, to anybody looking at me, that I was having any kind of fun.
Because you were working. You were stressing.
Yeah. And then it occurred to me that in a way this makes video games quite similar to other kind of art forms like tragedy or like horror cinema, which are art forms which we don't actually seem to be enjoying. So normally we try to avoid certain unpleasant emotions, but then we still like watch a tragic movie or read a tragic novel.
So there's a paradox between the pain that you feel when you're playing a video game, because it almost always ends in failure, and the fact that you can't stop playing it.
Yeah, definitely. So when I said that video games are the art of failure, what it means is that, in a way, it's really the failure that binds you to the game. So once you start playing a game and you fail, then you're kind of marked as flawed by the game. The game has told you that you're not good enough. And then, of course, it also tends to promise you that you can finally remedy yourself in some way if you keep playing. And so the thing that's different in games compared to, say, tragedy is that if you read a tragic novel about someone trying to overcome their personal limitations and so on, it's really the limitations of someone else. But if you play a game, it's actually your personal limitations that's the subject.
So any video game enthusiasts out there want to weigh in on this? Are you conscious of the learning curve in games and which ones are most rewarding or satisfying to fail at? 212-433-WNYC. Gamers, call in 212-433-9692. The phones are open for you. There's something about the format of the game, too. You write about how people are nostalgic that the age of the game is over. Now more often players have unlimited lives instead of, say, 3 lives or 7 or whatever. How does that change your experience of the game, and how does it play into your theory?
So I think that there's a large conception. A lot of people will argue that games have become easier these days, and there's a nostalgia for like the old days where it was really like you versus the machine, and until you had to put in more quarters. And
so you're right about Farmville, for example, the popular game on Facebook, where you don't really lose. You just, over whatever time you want to devote into it, grow and build your thing.
Yeah. I mean, so it's changed a lot. You rarely meet the kind of pure game over, especially in a single-player game. But it actually doesn't mean that you fail less. Often you will actually have more opportunities to fail. So the fact that you have like unlimited lives will actually mean that you can fail every few seconds if you so desire, whereas in the old days in the arcade, you would actually be very wary of doing that.
And from a character-building standpoint, is that better, worse, or the same?
It probably means that, in a way, the failure as such doesn't feel as bad because there are fewer tangible consequences to it, but it also feels that games tend to provide you with more learning opportunities these days. But if you take a game like Farmville, it's actually kind of interesting because those games don't tend to sort of tell you have failed so directly. It's much more in that kind of social failure. So I find Farmville very stressful because I find it difficult to make a good-looking farm. And so I find it embarrassing when people visit my farm. So in that case, it's not actually the game or the game rules directly telling me I'm failing. It's much more of a social experience and a kind of social anxiety experience.
So Roger in Westchester wants to weigh in on the feeling he gets when he's playing. Hi, Roger.
Hello there. Yeah, after hearing him speak, I realized that a lot of times when I'm playing a game and I'm deep into it because of the repetition of not succeeding, it's basically I'm going to show that game I'm not a failure. Yeah. Instead of any enjoyment.
Yeah, definitely. So in a way, you could say that. No, I certainly know what you mean. So in a way, you can say that what games often do is that they create a kind of artificial flaw in you. So games are often these kind of very artificial setups or weird puzzles that you've never seen before. And then once you start playing the game, suddenly you realize you're not good at this puzzle that's actually completely made up. And then, but then the game promises you that you can kind of escape from that. Eventually, and so in a way, you wanna escape from the kind of flaw that you just kind of accepted the game making up for you.
Milo in South Orange, you're on WNYC. Hi, Milo.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
How are you?
I'm great, thanks. So I had a question. My son, who is 8 years old, has been possibly diagnosed with Asperger's or ADHD, or he's been, you know, battling those symptoms anyway for his lifetime. Mm-hmm. Mostly he has trouble dealing with situations that come up that, you know, that don't go his way. But he's addicted to video games. He loves Skylanders video games. Mm. And we're constantly being told by teachers and doctors, you know, it's not a good idea for him to sit in front of these video games all the time. But do they have some kind of value where, you know, he's got to deal with failure and things not and disappointment?
Yeah, I mean, so I'm not a psychologist, so I can't kind of comment in that way. I can say that I think you can say in general that I think what makes games beautiful, if you will, often is the kind of focus they allow you, right? So in regular life, success and failure often comes with all kinds of footnotes. So you put a rover on Mars, then you end up being worried about what's going to happen to it. But then if you fail or succeed in a game, it tends to have a kind of clarity about it. And I think that's part of the kind of interesting or addictive nature of them. But of course, it's also in a way what I think in general, it's not a bad life lesson that perseverance pays off.
But are you saying that without really being able to give any advice to Milo with respect to her son, which clearly neither of us can do from any kind of medical or informed perspective, that playing video games can sometimes enhance your attention span rather than shorten it?
Oh, definitely. I mean, so I think that's the kind of the funny thing, right? The typical worry that people might have for video games is oh, my child or myself is spending too much time being focused on the thing and hours pass. But of course, it's also something that we clearly value, this kind of attention to sort of personal improvement over time at the same time.
Chris in Peekskill. wants to ask about a particular game. Hi, Chris.
Hey, good morning, fellas.
Hey. Good morning.
I'd like to ask your guest if he's ever heard of the game Dark Souls.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay, so you must be familiar with the fact that its goal is to punish you over and over again for you to learn from your deaths in order to move on. So what is your opinion of that game, and how does it, work on someone's attention span and concentration? Because normally something like that should be frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, it is a frustrating game, right? But there's something that happens socially, I think. For Dark Souls, everybody knows that Dark Souls is meant to be a very, very challenging and frustrating game. So in that way, you don't feel so bad for yourself because you're sharing that experience with everybody else. And you might go to the internet to read various like hints on how to solve this or that problem. So in that way, you don't feel like you're uniquely stupid, for example. You know everybody else is sharing that problem. So in the book, I actually discuss a game that's much easier, which was a tennis game I had on a cell phone, which would always tell me, no matter how I did, that I should be reading the basic instruction methods. And so it just kept telling me, which basically said, like, move the stick and press the button or something like that. And so in a way that...
Telling you you're an idiot.
Yeah, telling me that I was an idiot. And in a way, actually, so that actually felt, I think, much worse than it feels to play Dark Souls. Because in Dark Souls, you know, in a way, it's the game that's set up like that.
You write in the book that game-like structures are something we run into every day in real life. Mm-hmm. And you bring up the example of Wall Street, particularly that the financial crisis of 2008 was an example of game-like structures gone awry.
Yeah. I mean, so I think one of the things that tends to work so well in games is that a game sets up, in a way, a kind of truth or an objective measure of how well you're doing. And the joy of playing a game is following that. And then I think the idea of performance measures often is something similar, right? That there is an objective measure of how well you're doing, and then you just have to score many points on that. But then the thing with that financial institution was they were rewarding people on the basis of the loans they were approving. And this was very much like a game. And of course, you can say this shows you why that's a problem in actual life. But it's so beautiful in a game because you can just focus on racking up the points. But in regular life, when you apply exactly that, you're also asking people to suspend sound judgment. And that can be a problem.
But does that contradict your thesis that games prepare us for the real world through self-improvement?
Well, I mean, it certainly tells us that we shouldn't be kind of idiots, right? They do prepare us in the sense that they teach us that it pays to kind of keep improving yourself or putting in effort. And then, of course, you still have to kind of keep your sound judgment when you go out there.
I just want to get your quick thought on all the discussion since the Newtown shootings about video games. Certainly the NRA wants to draw attention to them to distract attention from guns, but it's a real issue, violent video games. Does this play into your theory at all?
It's not something I discuss explicitly. I discuss more issues like tragedy in the kind of fiction of a game. But I should say I didn't grow up in the United States, so some of this gun discussion is always a bit alien or alienating to me. But I do think, in a way...
But just what we get trained to do by playing violent video games a lot?
I think it's a bit of an issue that you could say that games certainly tend you to tell you or teach you to be good at that particular game. I do also think that games operate like other media in that humans tend to put in whatever they're interested in, and so we have violent opera, and so we also have violent games.
Jesper Juul is visiting professor at the NYU Game Center and author now of The Art of Failure, an essay on the pain of playing video games. Thank you so much.
Thank you.